This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
A new world. The new start. The same problems that ended our world on Earth.
Initiating trimester one.
These children are the future of humanity.
Do not tell them what I am. I want my children to be safe.
Hello everyone and welcome to Popcorn Culture. I'm Lee Chui Lin and joining me as always, Shamila Ganesan and Arvind Yuvaraj. So last week, we spoke primarily about a sort of promotion that our friends at Astro are running in terms of bringing blockbusters to our screen. And today we're talking about smaller but no less enjoyable stories, I think, in some way, because they're also having a promotion called Discover Your Stories, which is more focused on television. And to be honest, I think that on balance, right, this year's been better for TV than it has been for movies.
As smaller is an interesting descriptor, right? Because actually, if we look at the shows that we're about to talk about, they're small only in the sense that they're meant for TV. All of them actually cover huge scopes, you know, whether you're talking about civilizations in other worlds or, you know, gigantic historical disasters or even just the progressive melting down of someone's marriage. The stories are not small in scope, but it's interesting that they're happening on TV.
The fact that you said melting down after disaster,
I cannot. I didn't mean that. I'm sorry.
They also like they're all over the place, right? The stories they cover, like you said, like a huge, such a big variety of things. But at the same time, also, we wouldn't have been able to see the kind of things that we are seeing on TV today. Maybe even like 5-10 years ago. The CGI, the sets, the kind of just the size of the shows themselves. These things belong on the big screen. And also because these things happen to suddenly show up on TV, like the stuff we see on the small screen is sometimes better than the stuff we see on the big screen.
Actually, TV has been better than the movies. I think it's been slowly creeping up, right? It's not just this year, although this year has kind of exacerbated it simply because, well, the movies have given us so little. Not their fault, but it is what it is. So we're going to be talking about primarily three TV series or three mini series in some cases. So there is Raised by Wolves, there's Chernobyl, and The Undoing. The Undoing is the newest one, so we'll get to that later on. But for now, let's kick it back to late 2019 when the lightest watch hit our screens, and that is Chernobyl, which is a 5-part miniseries that focuses on, well, you know, exactly its namesake. It's the disaster that was Chernobyl.
I'm very, very glad in some ways that I watched Chernobyl before 2020. It did come out late 2019. I managed to catch it almost exactly after it came out. It's such a good show, and I'm glad that I watched it when I was in the right headspace for it, because it really is one of the best shows that I've seen easily in the last 5 years. But it's also deeply, deeply difficult to watch, right? It is about the nuclear meltdown in the Chernobyl plant. It's also about all of the poor decision making and the politicking that went on around it. It's both human as well as political, governmental, international. It's such a good show. It's also, I would say, a deeply difficult show. So you have to be in the right headspace for it. But if you are, and if you haven't caught it yet, now might actually be a good time.
I might actually do it now. So I've been putting off Chernobyl for a while, even though so many people have told me to check it out and said that it's one of the best things they saw like last year, because it's based on like true events and it's very accurate to the stuff that actually happened. It is horrific in like every sense. There's nothing, there's no upside. upside about whatever happened at the plant, right? And there are also like a few things that I don't want to see, to do with the animals, to do with the people that lived around the plant.
Oh yeah, the dog episode in particular is singled out by many people as being particularly traumatic.
Yeah, especially that. So I'm going to check it out. I might check it out. I might have to prep myself first before going into this show.
And don't binge it.
No.
I binged it. So I don't recommend it, but I did do it. And I want to talk about why, because like you, Arvin, I kind of put it off for a while. And then when I started, I wasn't really sure how I was going to feel. And I think Chernobyl is one of those shows where the quality trumps so much of everything else that you just keep going, because the story is told remarkably well. It's not surprising that in a cast that has Jared Harris, Stellan Skarsgård, Emily Watson, that the performances are all singularly, you know, just singularly and universally very, very good. Everybody does a fantastic job with their respective stories. And it's so, I found myself drawn along despite the fact that honestly, watching that show gave me nightmares. It made me look at my microwave and think, what are you? Are you going to harm me? Even though one has nothing to do with the other. But it just makes you think about radiation in a way that for those of us who didn't necessarily remember the Chernobyl disaster when it initially happened, I think it makes you kind of recalibrate what we know. It's such a compelling argument for nuclear disarmament. Like, if nothing else, you watch it and you think, I don't understand why we have these things.
And it's a weird, for me, it was a weird sort of throwback, because I had watched Chernobyl when, you know, the pandemic became a thing this year. And because there are all of these scenes of how people deal with radiation exposure and not being able to be around your loved ones when they are gravely ill, you know, when they die sometimes, isolation chambers in hospitals, that suddenly this year when that happened, it was actually Chernobyl that I went to for the first time. There's something very deeply human in the way that it portrays this disaster, that even if, you know, it didn't happen in a part of the world that you're familiar with, that historically you didn't have any connections to it, watching the stories that it uses to tell what happened is so deeply affecting and so human.
I wanted to ask you guys, like, is Chernobyl even slightly, can it be considered like exploitation in a way? Because that's one of the few complaints that I've heard. Like, it uses the disaster, the tragedy to create entertainment. I know a lot of shows do that, but is Chernobyl guilty of doing something like that as well?
Like I said earlier, I think that because you watch it and you come away from it thinking this must never happen again. This just, you know, this can't happen again. I cannot honestly say that I watched Chernobyl and found it entertaining. And I think in order for there to be some element of that, you have to have found it almost circus level entertaining, right? Where you're pointing and you're staring at something and it's freakish or something along those lines. And the show doesn't do anything like that. It is instead very invested, I think, in telling the story in a very visually beautiful way, but it's also very emotionally honest, I felt. And so I don't think so. But then again, as somebody who wasn't directly affected by it, I feel like I also can't say.
I agree with you, Lynn. I mean, I also think it's because the show is very much preoccupied with questions of truth and questions of responsibility, being accountable, corruption, mismanagement. And these are all things that even today plagues so many of our institutions, that it ends up feeling like a cautionary tale rather than capitalizing on a disaster.
It's about the moral overall.
Absolutely.
I think so, yeah. So we've been talking about Chernobyl, which is currently available to watch on demand. We'll get to how you can catch that in a little bit. Before that, though, just to touch on another high-profile TV show that came out this year with a very big name attached to it. Everybody was very excited at the idea that Ridley Scott was, you know, kind of diving into TV, and that is Raised by Wolves.
I mean, if you know Ridley Scott, this has so many of the hallmarks, right? The sort of cold, silvery surfaces. The
Are you AI, a human?
Yes, what it means to be human. People that you constantly wonder whether they're really human or not. AI, humanity versus the survival of the race, so on and so forth. So I was very excited about Raised by Wolves. It's a story of two androids who are tasked with caring for a group of children in another planet. That's the premise. And we don't quite know why they've been abandoned there and so forth. I gotta say, like, great premise. Everything looks great, but I kind of lost interest after the first few episodes. I think this would have worked much better as a movie than a TV show.
So Raised by Wolves is a show that I want to love, like, so badly. Like, like you said, there's everything Ridley Scott-ish that I like. And it's sort of like, it's very Prometheus. It's very, very Alien Covenant. But for some reason, it doesn't feel like it's going anywhere. So I've watched a couple of episodes. I don't know if I'll continue or not. There are a lot of huge concepts that I love that come from Ridley Scott. And he has this, like, expansive universe, and it's always to do with stuff like religion, humanity, origins, you know, all those things. Not sure what's missing.
So do either of you want more from it? You know, are you excited? Because I haven't seen it.
No, I'm not. And I think that's the main problem. I feel about it more like I did about Alien Covenant than I did about Prometheus. So I loved Prometheus. I'm one of those that, you know, probably am not on the side of those who thought it was not great. But it made me want more. This show, every episode doesn't give me anything to want more.
I want more. I want a lot more. Like, I'll give season two a chance. I want to go back and revisit season one and see where it goes. And because I think this show can go places. Like, it has so much to offer. So I want a lot more from this show. And I want, like, an end point. I want to see where he's going with this. Also because this was a show that was brought to him. It's not a show from his own mind or whatever. It was, like, proposed to him, and then he thought that he'd be interested in producing it. Then I'd want season two to, like, upgrade itself.
So we're talking about some of the shows that you can find right now on the Discover Your Stories promotion that Astro has. And you can stream all seasons, all episodes of these programs, anytime on demand via UltraBox, Connected PVR Box, or the Astro Go app. Let us know, though. I mean, have you seen Raised by Wolves? Are you excited by it? Do you think that Christmas is the time that you're going to finally watch Chernobyl? you can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
There are moments we can just lose ourselves. It doesn't undo who we are in our entirety.
I'll fix this.
Tonight, the gruesome discovery of a mother bludgeoned to death.
Nobody seems to really know anything.
What are the police making of it?
Mom, you're acting strange.
We are investigating a crime.
So if you know something, tell us what it is.
You either read me my rights right now, or tell me I'm free to go.
Hello, you are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Arvin, and Sharmila. And together, we are talking about the Discover Your Stories promotion that Astro has running at the moment. Or more accurately, we're talking about the shows that fall within that umbrella, because there are some really, really good ones. And earlier, we spoke about Chernobyl, Raised by Wolves. Now, I want to talk about a pretty interesting show that just came out a month or so ago now, and that is The Undoing, which is the latest from David E. Kelly and has the cast of pretty much, you know, Hollywood's finest in some ways, you know, people who usually you see in movies, and that's Nicole Kidman and Hugh Grant.
Was anyone else as excited as I was when I heard that there was going to be a sort of marital mystery drama that involved Hugh Grant and Nicole Kidman? Because I was so psyched for the show. And,
same.
And I'm glad that it didn't let me down. I was pleasantly surprised because it also sounded like, to quote Arvin from one of our previous shows, one of those, like, dreary HBO projects that you just want to, like, you know, tear your eyes out by the end. But it wasn't that.
No, it wasn't that. And also, the show is very, very smart in the way that it feels like one of those typical, like, crime thrillers, like something has gone wrong and you're supposed to figure out who did it. The show kind of lets you know who did it, but also it doesn't. So it tricks you into believing that you're smarter than the show is, and you're pointing at it going like, oh, I know what this is, and this is the person who's involved. But then it's not. It's very cleverly written in that way. There's a lot of, like, sleight of hand. There's a lot of bait and switch. And by the end of it, you think you know what's going on, but you actually don't.
So Nicole Kidman is Grace Frazier, right? Mm. Who is this clinical psychologist who seems to have it all together. She's got a son, she's got a great husband, you know, really nice life. And then a mother in her son's school starts befriending her in a sort of moderately creepy way. Mm-hmm. And then that mother is found dead, essentially murdered. In the meantime, Grace's husband, Jonathan, played by Hugh Grant, goes missing. And that's really the setup, right? And the rest of the time is spent to finding out what happened to Elena Alves, who is the mom in question, the murder victim. I didn't know why I liked it, but I liked it. It's essentially melodrama. It's a soap opera. There's nothing... It's not a show that is about anything. I think the show I was thinking the most about while watching it was actually The Crown, in the sense that... This is a show about rich people and rich people problems. It's kind of weirdly compelling, but it's also not about anything other than what it is. You know, it's a marital drama. It's a soap opera. It's not trying to pass some big commentary on anything, even though it probably could, but it doesn't try to do that and it doesn't try to go there.
The show is also deeply aware that it's rich people and rich people's problems.
Oh, yes.
And it puts you in the position of actually being like, oh God, I want to eye roll at you. And I'm glad that all of you are suffering almost. But I think a lot of it has to do with what Arvind said as well. It's every episode ends on a cliffhanger, which is great, because for this format, you know, something is revealed and then blackout. Then you find out in the next episode. So I've missed having shows like that, and they're not cheap. Like, it is genuinely a sort of like, what? That's happening? I didn't realize that. And so I think there's some amount of pleasure in watching these kinds of shows, which I think not many people try to do anymore. And it's done with sort of these prestige actors in a prestige way instead of a CSI way, which I enjoyed.
Prestige actors who have done creepy roles in the past. Mm-hmm. So Hugh Grant is cast specifically for a reason, and they know what the reason is, and it's the kind of confusion that the show creates. Nicole Kidman has been creepy before. Like, she has done a lot of roles where you're not exactly sure where she's going with this, and you think there's something behind. Like, she has an agenda for everything she says and does. So she is also like very specific. And I also like how the show is like Lynn mentioned, melodrama. It is very mellow. But at the same time, it's not mellow to the point of being unreal.
So there's realism, but it's also a soap opera, right? Like,
yes.
Like, it's straight up soapy. And I think what I like about it is that it's elevated cheese. It's a cheese platter. It's mm-hmm. not your run-of-the-mill cheese wrapped in plastic. It's laid out on, you know, a pretty little platter with the nuts and all that. It's still cheese. So, and that's the beauty of it. Like, everybody is going for 100. All the performances are... I've never seen Nicole Kidman's eye flutter so much, you know, and I never got tired of it. It has the distinction. I believe I read this somewhere, that it is HBO's, I want to say, only the first show to gain viewership every week over the course of the season. And I can totally see that, because you come in first for the cast, right? For the Nicole Kidman, Hugh Grant star power. You're not sure whether you like it, and then you stay on, because after a while you're just like, who did it? Was it the son? Was it the grandfather? Was it a random teacher? Even though you kind of always know.
We haven't had a good water cooler show in ages. And that's exactly what this is. I mean, forget the fact that nobody's gathering around water coolers this year, okay? But it's nice to imagine that that's what you'd be doing. If you watch this at a different time, you'd probably, and if you watched it sort of every week rather than binged it, you'd be talking to your friends about who did it, your theories. And that's kind of cool. And apparently that did happen with people. There were all of these forums with people, you know, exactly what you just said, thinking it was some rando who happened to walk by in one frame who was the murderer. And I wanted to shout out, though, when you're talking about dialing up to 100, we haven't mentioned Donald Sutherland, who, for me, the best thing about the show. He plays Grace's father, who is like this super rich, privileged white man who also genuinely would cut someone, which is awesome.
He's Hunger Games version, like Donald Sutherland.
But like a real dad in New York, yeah.
Yeah, sure. But if he walked out of the Hunger Games. But it's also like... speaking about the setting, right? I love shows that are able to take like big cities and like, you know, like huge metropolitan areas and make them feel very, very lonely and isolated. I think that's like a talent, because I would like to see like a murder mystery that happens in a setting that looks like Friends or How I Met Your Mother, you know, like a sitcom setting. It never happens. It never jives. And taking a city and sort of like hollowing it out and making people feel like super, like very alone and by themselves, I think is it's a gift, and it's a kind of writing that works really well for this show.
And the show is incredibly atmospheric, right? Like it does a lot of things with pretend flashbacks, with flashes of images, with all these very, they do very interesting visual shots as well, which helps to tell what is essentially a very simple story. I agree, Donald Sutherland was far and away my favorite on-screen presence. Every time he showed up, I felt enlivened and afraid. But I also think that Hugh Grant has really been flexing and leaning into the second half of his career as a character actor who is subverting everything that he used to be. And I just so enjoy watching that. So we've been talking about The Undoing, which is something that you can catch right now on Astro. You can stream all seasons and all episodes. There's only one season here, really, but you can stream all of it anytime on demand via UltraBox, Connected PVR Box, or the AstroGo app. We spoke earlier as well about other shows you can do this with. That includes Chernobyl, Raised by Wolves. There's so many titles, so you can go check that out. But let us know, did you watch The Undoing? Did you think perhaps that it was someone it was not? Did the show dupe you? Did you enjoy it? WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.